There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
What's the latest? Chris McCarty?
It certainly has. Yes, the Baggies are back in it. It's West Brom 1, Liverpool 2. No sooner had Mo Salah scored his 41st goal of a quite extraordinary season in the colours of Liverpool Football Club. Jake Livermore, a good old-fashioned stramash in that penalty box. And it was Jake Livermore after Karius had saved well. I'm not quite sure from who, but he did save well, and it was Jake Livermore who was on the right place at the right time to sweep home. 9 minutes remaining then at the Hawthorns. The West Brom boys, they need a victory. They really do if they are to pull off the great escape. They have got 8 minutes or so left now to score two in what would be one of the stories of the season. I can't see it myself, but it is West Brom 1, Liverpool 2.
Thanks so much indeed for that. What's happening in the rugby, CPR?
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, of course, is the second of the semi-finals for the Challenge Cup. Cardiff Blues taking on Pau, and they leading that game 13 points to 10, 49 minutes played. In Super Rugby, the Bulls have just kicked off against the Rebels. 3 minutes played, it's still 0-0.
There's more rugby to look forward to a little later on.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. Super Rugby at 7 o'clock. We've got the Sharks taking on the Stormers, and then, of course, the first of the European Rugby Cup semi-finals, Leinster taking on Scarlets. That is kicking off at 6:30 UAE time.
Lots of sport to look forward to this afternoon, into the evening as well. Early kickoff in the Premier League. We're going to have more details on our live game from the Premier League in just a few moments' time. But there are also plenty of football to look forward to in all the European leagues and also up in Scotland as well. In fact, there is an early underway, and it's not all going Celtic's way. Chris McCarty.
It certainly is not, and I can tell you there's been another goal since you last came to me as well. It is now Hibernian 2, Celtic 0. So that title party will have to wait for another week. Celtic, of course, could have clinched a seventh successive title, a second under the leadership, under the stewardship of Brendan Rodgers. Not to be today, though, because goals from Jamie McLaren and Vikintas Slivika as well, who has just added his name to the score sheet a moment or so ago. So Hibernian managed, let us not forget, by the former Celtic player, former Celtic manager Neil Lennon. He will, I'm sure, enjoy this one this evening. It is Hibs 2, Celtic 0.
Lots, to look forward to in the Premier League, and we'll speak to Adam Bridge in just a few moments' time to get his thoughts ahead of Watford against Crystal Palace. Just the two games. Why? Because it is Emirates FA Cup semi-final weekend. Manchester United take on Tottenham in the game that kicks off 8:15 this evening.
It is. It's 8:15 this evening. So, keep an eye on that one. It is a match you can hear live and exclusively on Dubai 103.8. So if you're not getting yourself to a television, if you're not making it down to Barasti, then fear not, you can get the game on the airwaves, Dubai 103.8.
I can guarantee that Phil's showing it down here at Barasti today, though, that's for sure. On the big screen, it will be Manchester United against Spurs. That's going to pull in a big crowd this afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. And Chris reckons it's a must-win for Spurs. I kind of reckon it's a must-win for United. You know, I think United, looking at the money that they spent going without silverware this season, I think, you know, this is their one last chance. So I think it is actually a must-win for United. And, as you say, a big game nonetheless. Pressure on both managers, I feel, for this one.
Eibar taking on Getafe in the early kickoff over in the Spanish La Liga. It's finished there as well. Getafe taking the points at Eibar through that sole goal, Oliveira, on 23 minutes for the visitors. Just one other game in La Liga today. Celta Vigo taking on Valencia. That one's kicking off at 6:15. There is a big game, though, in Spain a little later on in proceedings. It is the Spanish Copa del Rey. Sevilla against Barcelona. Barcelona?
Yeah, Barcelona for me. Sevilla, they knocked out Manchester United from the Champions League, but it's been a so-so season. They've had managerial changes there. Vincenzo Montella, the Italian, now in charge, Tom. But yeah, Barcelona, they've been a class apart domestically. The shock of losing to Roma and the manner with which they did in that second leg of their UEFA Champions League tie, you know, 4-1 up from the first leg. You'd have never thought Barcelona would throw that away. They did. That will still rankle. That will still hurt. But I do expect Barcelona to win tonight, and that will be one half of the domestic double completed. And, of course, they are bidding to become the first team in La Liga history to go the entire season unbeaten.
Real Madrid rather disappointing in La Liga this year. They just didn't seem to kind of find the gears. But then again, you know, they're right up there in the Champions League. And I just thought that a little bit disappointing this season.
Yeah, I watched them midweek against Athletic Bilbao. It was one apiece at the Bernabeu. And, yeah, huffed and puffed once again. Carl, I think changes are afoot this summer. You know, Luka Modric, Toni Kroos have not really shown the form they showed last season in the centre of the pitch, and I do expect changes. But of course, it's Real Madrid, and when they are in the Champions League, they've just got something. There's something that marries up beautifully with that tournament in Real Madrid.
Chris, you know, we spoke earlier about Arsene Wenger, who's going to be his replacement. We are all saying it shouldn't be a player. They should maybe look at a lot more experience. But then, if you go look back at Real Madrid, they brought in Zinedine Zidane at the time. A lot of people were saying the same thing. And what a success story he's been.
He's been incredible, has Zizou. Again, you don't often associate wise, and I guess hindsight's a wonderful thing, but you don't normally associate proper appointments and done by Real Madrid, but they did it right with Zizou. He was at the club a number of years, former player, of course. He knew all the facets. He worked closely with Florentino Perez. He worked closely with Carlo Ancelotti during the Italians' time in charge. He then spent a time as boss of Castilla, and he got to really understand the fabric of the football club. And listen, did I expect him to do what he's done? No, I did not. And the story keeps on going. And if he were to deliver a third successive Champions League for Real Madrid, I mean, we may as well all go home now.
Early kickoff over in Italy. It's just got underway. Spal taking on Roma over there. 10 minutes in, no goals in that one. Sassuolo take on Fiorentina at 8 o'clock this evening. And at 10:45, AC Milan at home to Benevento. Several games to look forward to over in France, first of which kicks off at 7 o'clock, Marseille against Lille, then Amiens against Strasbourg, Guingamp take on Monaco, Metz are at home to Caen, and Toulouse take on Angers. All those games later kickoffs at 10 o'clock this evening. Plus, full schedule over in the German Bundesliga. They kick off in around about 15 minutes' time, but it's done and dusted down there anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Bundesliga's done and dusted by Munich, champions for us. Oh, we've got a goal. We have got a goal, and my goodness, from 2-0 up Liverpool, it's now West Bromwich Albion 2, Liverpool 2. It's a devilish free kick from the left-hand side. I think it will be. I've got to confirm this, but Chris Brunt, in fact, it's not. It's James McLean, or is it Chris Brunt? It was one of them, over the left foot. In swinger, Karius in absolute no-man's land. And it is big Rondon, the Venezuelan striker, gets there first, gets ahead of the defender. And this occasion, he's getting ahead of big Dejan Lovren. He's ahead of Karius, and he heads the ball into the bottom corner. What a turnaround at the Hawthorns then. 88 minutes on the clock from 2-0 down, dead and buried. Could West Bromwich Albion... Well, it's that end of the season, isn't it? Another goal, and West Bromwich Albion will be dreaming yet again of another quite remarkable escape.
Right, let's turn our attention to what's happening here on the show a little later on in proceedings, because Premier League will be the main focus from 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE, the 3 o'clock kickoffs back in the UK. Usually we have a bit of a tough time wondering which game to cover for the 6 o'clock kickoffs. It's made it a little easier today, is it not, Chris McCarty, because there's just the one game to look forward to?
There is just the one game. It is Watford against Crystal Palace. That is our featured match today. Looking forward to it ahead of the Emirates FA Cup semi-final between Manchester United and, of course, Tottenham. And delighted to say that, joining us now live on the line, it is, I believe, Russell Hargreaves joins us. He is co-coms this afternoon. Russell, are you there?
I am indeed. How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, very well, Russell. Well, I'm not going to lie to you and say I'm not that looking forward to Watford Crystal Palace. I'm more looking forward to Manchester United against Tottenham. Before we talk, though, all things Watford Palace, got to get your thoughts, Russell, on the big news in the past 24 hours. Arsene Wenger is to finally step down as Arsenal boss at the end of the season. Your reaction to it, and do you feel that it's been handled accordingly, appropriately by the Arsenal hierarchy?
I do, actually, and funnily enough, I actually do work pretty closely with Arsenal. I present their club podcast and in quite a lot of their TV commentary, so it's a club that's very close to my heart for the last 3 or 4 years work-wise. And I think there's been that feeling that Wenger was going to go at some stage. I think a lot of people would say he should have gone at the end of last season and left with his head held high after winning the FA Cup against Chelsea. He decided to stay on, and from there was always this kind of issue of him being a new two-year contract signed, but just not getting the results anywhere near what was needed. And I think it's a really good call to decide to go now, to make it public with 3 or 4 weeks of the season left, and therefore mean that the fans can be re-energised, start coming back to Emirates Stadium, the players motivated to finish well for their boss, and also to put themselves in the shop window for whichever new manager comes in. And as we know, it's critical for Arsenal to get back into the Champions League. The only way they can realistically do that is to win the Europa League, with Atletico Madrid to come leg one of that semi-final this coming Thursday. All all of a sudden the feel-good factor for Wenger to finish well is there, and everyone's starting to reflect on the brilliance of Arsene Wenger's 22 years, all the Premier League titles, the FA Cups, the invincible season, and all of the heartbreak and frustration of recent years, clearly not forgotten. But it's just been swept to one side a little bit to focus on the positives for what we now know definitively is the end of his run, and many would say about time. It's been poorly handled that it's gone on this long, but well handled that decisions now been made and they haven't waited till the end of the season when perhaps they didn't win the Europa League and things could have got even more toxic moving forward.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there, Russell. He, I guess, in 22 years in charge at that football club, he has deserved this little farewell swan song over the course of the next few weeks. There'll be a lot of plaudits and I'm sure an awful lot written and said about Arsene Wenger and his legacy at that football club. You've got close ties at Arsenal then, Russell. Tell me, who are the names? Who do you expect to be in that dugout come the start of next season?
Well, there's three different schools of thought about what kind of manager is going to come in. Is it going to be a kind of veteran, proven manager? You look at Carlo Ancelotti, who's already thrown his hat into the ring. He's rebought a house in London. People linked him with a move back to Chelsea. I don't think that's going to happen. Arsenal could be an option. He'd be one of those kind of veteran managers who's been there and done it and could handle the pressure. Allegri, Juventus is another one that I know Arsenal are very keen on in that kind of regard. Or do you go for a younger, external manager? You think of Julian Nagelsmann and how well he's done at Hoffenheim in the Bundesliga. They've got one or two other excellent managers around Europe currently out of work. Thomas Tuchel, formerly of Borussia Dortmund, but he's expected to go to Paris Saint-Germain. Perhaps Luis Enrique, formerly of Barcelona, currently without a job. That's that kind of middle tier of foreign younger managers who might come in and do a good job. The third argument is to go to a more, not strictly internal candidate, but somebody who's young and knows the club already. Obviously, Patrick Vieira is a man who's currently managing New York City out in the States, part of the Man City programme, but beloved by Arsenal. He would be an interesting option. Mikel Arteta's also with Man City as their assistant coach. You can look at those guys. Even Thierry Henry, of course, staff striker for the club, now assistant manager at Belgium and former youth team coach with Arsenal. Do you chuck somebody like that in? I'd say no. Maybe see one of those through as an assistant coach with a more tried and trusted top boss, but there's tons of names out there. I understand that Ivan Gazidis, the Arsenal chairman, has got a five-man shortlist. We don't know strictly what that shortlist is. Pretty sure that the likes of Allegri and Ancelotti would be on it, and maybe Nagelsmann as well. So it's going to be a fascinating few weeks to see who they choose, how they choose them, and what balance maybe of a head coach and an assistant they go with to work with the club's new sporting director that came in, and a new head of performance as well. So there's already been a bit of a shake-up off the field, which implied that Wenger was on his way. How they get the mix is going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, watch this space on this one. Intriguing times for Arsenal Football Club moving forward. We revert back to our featured match this evening if we can, Russell. It is Watford against Crystal Palace. I guess Watford's safe. It's been a bit of a meh season in many regards. You know, they've changed managers a couple of times. We've seen Crystal Palace, Roy Hodgson come in there. And with another 3 points today, would that be about it for Crystal Palace and safety for next season?
Yeah, it would actually put Palace above Watford as well, interestingly, on goal difference, which would be fascinating. And Watford have had this really weird season, haven't they? Brilliant start under Marco Silva. Then head turned, as we understand it, with interest from Everton. The performances go south. He gets sacked. In comes Javi Gracia. Performances pick up. They climb back up the table. But then, as you say, in recent weeks, they've hit the skids massively, Watford. I think they'll be safe. There's too much of a buffer to the bottom three teams, but they've only picked up 1 point from a possible 15. And their head-to-head record against Palace is absolutely horrific as well. Really, really poor. Palace have won 5, drawn 2 and lost just 1 of their last 8 head-to-head games in competitions. And also Palace are unbeaten in 6 at Vicarage Road on Watford's turf as well. And for Palace, what a strange season. That awful, awful start where they obviously didn't pick up a point or indeed a goal in their first 6 games. We saw De Boer get sacked. In came Roy Hodgson. Took him a little while to find his feet, but the impression that he made has been long-lasting. It's been critical, and he's done so well, Hodgson, helped in no small part by Wilfried Zaha. Just brilliant when he's been fit this season, and of course he's banging form at the moment. His record against Watford is stunning. His recent form as a whole is stunning, and for me, Zaha is the man who'll probably pull the strings for Palace to win at Watford again. Get the points, as you say, they need to stay safe and ironically beat Watford, climb above Watford and keep going up that table. But we will wait and see. It's always tough to back an away team in a two-horse race, but I think most people would say the stats and the gut reaction would lead to maybe a Palace win, but you never know.
Yeah, that match is live and exclusive on Dubai Eye 103.8 from 6 p.m. over here in the UAE. Before you go, Russell, just want you to give us your thoughts, if you can, ahead of that first Emirates FA Cup semi-final a little later this evening. Manchester United going to Wembley Stadium, which is, of course, the home of Spurs this season. How do you see that one going? And I tell you the question that I guess is on a lot of people's lips. Who's under more pressure in this one, Mauricio Pochettino or Jose Mourinho?
It's a really interesting question. What I thought was fascinating with Pochettino's pre-match comments was to say that the FA Cup's important, but it's not that important. And I find that fascinating as a man who's been at the club now for 4 years and hasn't actually won a trophy yet. And Tottenham's silverware weight, as everybody knows, is a long one. I think a lot of Spurs fans would be grateful just to win anything. And as Pochettino said, he wants the Champions League or the Premier League. Fair enough. But the FA Cup, I think, particularly to Spurs fans who've got a long and pretty illustrious history in the competition, is pretty key. I think on the whole, Spurs are going in the right direction. There's still one or two questions asked about Pochettino, particularly, you know, about perhaps his use of substitutions, leaving it too late to affect change and to make a meaningful alteration in matches. You can chuck that at him. Maybe sometimes his tactics are a little bit too negative and a little bit too based on fitness and ground coverage and not enough on individual flair. But you then contrast that to Manchester United and Jose Mourinho. Where do you even start? All the issues with Paul Pogba of late. You know, rumours that he's rubbed up various players the wrong way. He wants more and more money to spend in the summer on yet a new catalogue of top stars, and we understand that the board will back in to do that very thing. But how often can Mourinho keep demanding so many new expensive players and keep always laying the blame at other people's door when things don't go right? And to me, he's not done enough during his time at Manchester United so far to justify his big wages, his big status within the game. We know that Mourinho can be a fairly toxic and divisive character at times. Yes, he's bought some solid results and some success so far. I think next season for both managers pivotal, probably slightly more for Mourinho. I think Poch has still got more credit and more time in the bank at Spurs. They need silverware, don't get me wrong, but United, I think given the way Mourinho is, which is slightly anti the club as a whole and their approach to things, he needs to really start backing up what he's been saying, doing and spending. And this game, I guess, is key among that to get one game away from potentially another FA Cup.
Prediction then, Russell, before we let you go. United, Spurs in the late kickoff. Who are you leaning towards?
I would like to say Spurs, but I've just got a funny feeling that Mourinho might get this one done. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I wonder whether Man United might nick that 2-1, I'm going to say.
2-1, Russell. Top man, my friend. Always a pleasure catching up with the boys over at TalkSport International. Enjoy the game at Watford Crystal Palace. Russell will be on comms duty on that one. The kickoff is 6 p.m. out here in the UAE. For now, Russell, top man. We'll speak to you very soon.
No worries. Thanks a lot, guys.
Great stuff there. Nice to get the thoughts of the comms team ahead of Watford against Crystal Palace. When we come back, we're focusing our attention on all things netball, both locally and internationally. Stay tuned.
Let's go! This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hey, welcome back to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Game's finished, in fact, in the Premier League. Chris McCarty, how did it finish?
It was a good game as well. It ended up West Bromwich Albion 2, Liverpool 2. Liverpool led by 2-0. Danny Ings scoring early on in this one. Mohamed Salah, 41st goal of his quite remarkable season for the Egyptian. But Jake Livermore pulled one back after 79 minutes, and with 2 minutes remaining, it was the Venezuelan Jose Salomon Rondon who has rescued a point for West Bromwich Albion. They're 8th from safety, Tom. They've only got 3 matches remaining, so West Bromwich Albion fight to live another day. Inevitably though, they will be playing Championship football next season.
Let's get the mic over to the man alongside you because he's watching the rugby for us. What's the latest?
Yeah, Tom, the first result of the Challenge Cup, Cardiff Blues taking on Powell. They leading that one 13 points to 10, 71 minutes played. And then, of course, Super Rugby down in South Africa. It's the Bulls taking on the Rebels. Adrian Strauss, a try for the Bulls, separates the two teams. The score's there, 7 points to 3, Bulls leading.
Got about half an hour left on the show. We are going to be speaking in just a few moments' time to a gold medalist from the recently concluded Commonwealth Games down on the Gold Coast. Before that, we want to talk all things netball because it is a sport that has gone from strength to strength here in the region thanks to the tireless work of many individuals who have come together, recently celebrated the formation of the UAE Netball Association, got sponsorship deals to talk about. We've seen the game rise in no uncertain terms throughout the last couple of seasons. So we brought together some of the finest here. Now, this could take some time because it's something like a sort of, it's like an assembly lovely roll call, this one. So let's just make sure everyone's here. Sarah Donovan, open squad player, present?
I am here, yes.
Good stuff. Right, we'll have more from Sarah in just a few moments. Carly Lewis, open squad vice captain. Carly, present?
Hello, yeah.
Good
Hi.
Stuff, okay. I know she's here. Open squad player, advisory committee, UA Netball. Jill Porter, present?
Present,
good
yes.
stuff, good stuff. And open squad assistant coach, under 17 head coach Deb Jones, present?
Here, sir.
Good stuff, wonderful, right. And the person we'll be talking to first and foremost is the open squad head coach, Liv Mason. Liv, thanks so much indeed for coming on down. Talk to me, I mean, you've played netball around the world, you've been involved in netball throughout your entire career. What is it about here now that has seen such a rise in the popularity of the game of netball here in the region?
I think netball's really grew in the UAE over the past few years, thanks to the expat community really pushing it in the British schools. It's excellent for girls over here being a female sport, and it's really good to get all the females involved in it in the schools and around the region.
You are the head coach of the Open Squad. For those out there that don't know the history behind the Open Squad, what is the Open Squad?
So the Open Squad is our senior squad in the UAE Netball Association. So we currently have our Open Squad and an under 17 squad too.
And Deb, obviously you've got you're involved in both of those, head coach for the under 17s. Talk to me about the level of, I know that the majority of the players are here. We're talking to five of the girls at the moment, but majority of the crew are down here. Talent. We've been talking about talent over the last couple of years and the untapped potential here in the region. Is that now being tapped? Are we seeing the results come to fruition?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are lots of opportunities for grassroots netball, and that's grown exponentially over the past few years, and there are quite a few quality providers out there. So with those girls playing, you know, week in, week out, and having some great role models, not just the under 17 open squad, but actually now that we've got a senior squad for the first time, it's great for them to see what netball can be like, and I think it will only grow even more because of that.
Let's talk to Sarah Donovan. She's over there, open squad player, part of the crew as well. Sarah, have you enjoyed the time with the open squad? Is there potential here?
I think massive potential, yes. I think it's the first time we've been able to reach out across all the Emirates and pull everybody together. I think for this now, we'll set the stage for the UAE so that more and more of the national players will come from the local community.
I mean, we're talking to coaches about the sort of talent out there as well. Is that what you're seeing from a playing point of view as well, the variety of talent that's available?
Yeah, absolutely. I think right the way through from the littlest across the different Emirates here that we saw at IG in March, going right the way up to the talent that's sitting around here now, I think there's an amazing opportunity to build netball and have it as a big national sport here in the UAE.
Carly's also with us, Open Squad vice captain as well. Carly, big smile on your face there when the Wales score was read out as well, but big smile on your face because of the state of netball at the moment here in the region. How are things going for you and the squad?
Oh, good. Yeah, I didn't understand that. But yeah, we've just been, we trialled just before Christmas. And obviously, we've just been training on the run-up now until we go to Gibraltar. But like Sarah's just mentioned, it's just gone from strength to strength, really. We've got a great group of girls. I've really been putting in the hard work and the training. So looking forward to really going to Gibraltar and making a stance for the UAE and hopefully bringing home some silverware.
And in terms of that, I mean, talk to us about the training at the moment. Where are we at? Are we training every single day? Are we training a couple of days a week?
It's got a lot better. It's increased quite a lot. I know we get together, we have our squad training sessions most Saturdays, where that's where we're getting on the court and kind of getting used to each other and playing together, because we've all of us players part of the Dubai Netball League, but a lot of us are in different teams. So it's been great to actually all come together and really put the work in on the court. And now we're doing S&C training sessions, which is great for us. You know, getting in the gym at 5:45, which isn't so great, but yeah, really getting together and working hard in the gym. Yeah, so it's been really good, and doing individualised sessions for our areas of court, so defence, centre court and shooters, so it's been great.
Jill's alongside you as well, player, but also advisory committee of UAE Netball. And I want to focus on that. We will talk about that as we continue the conversation. But we've talked, haven't we, over recent seasons and recent times about the need for more structure of the game here as well. Is that what's happened with the associations that we've been able to get ratified in recent times?
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing that's happened. And already, the association's only really been going for the past year now, but already we're seeing more kind of unity between the Emirates. So Dubai Netball League, Abu Dhabi Netball League, Fujairah, all the individual leagues are now talking a lot more. There's a lot more communication between them. So that can only lead to, you know, better pathways for the younger players to come through in those combined leagues. And the great thing is now that we have an association, it means that we can have a national squad, because a lot of people don't realise that without an association, a governing body, you actually can't have that. So now that we have that in place, you know, there's something for these young players to aspire to, and that's the most important thing. You know, up until now, they haven't really had national player role models for this sport, and that's what they have now. That's really important, because we all know, you know, growing up, we all grew up playing netball because we all had players that we could aspire to, you know, coming from the various countries that we come from. So yeah, that's the biggest part of it now.
Who can play for the UA national team? Can anyone play for the team?
In terms of nationalities and background? We fall under the International Netball Federation rules, which is that you need a minimum two-year continuous residency in the UAE to play. We know that across other sports, you have to have Emiratis in the team, and we know that comes into play. We're really fortunate in that the government have recognised that netball is an expat sport here, essentially, and it's not actually played in national schools, which is why we have started an Emiratization program as part of the UAE Association. So we've started a pilot program in the last couple of weeks where we're going into schools in Ajman and Sharjah, taking the sport into those schools and getting the girls playing. We'll also be doing things like taking the sport into the local ladies clubs, Sharjah, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, to get the women involved, because sport is really growing here for women specifically, and that's where our sport is so special. It is a women's sport. You know, guys can play. We've got mixed leagues that go on. But it is a women's sport, and that's why we love it. So, yeah, the association has been really important in, you know, sharing that. And, yeah.
I love that. I love the little giggle that went around there. Guys can play, but, you know, we're better. Yeah, which I think goes without saying as well. But listen, I want to continue this conversation, but we're also blessed to have with us here players, but also coaches who are mates with some of the best out there on the planet at the moment. Gold medal winners, nonetheless, and we will have one of them on the line after this.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
More Premier League action coming your way in just a few moments' time, so stay tuned to Dubai Eye 103.8, live coverage of the Premier League from 6 o'clock this afternoon. But in the meantime, we are talking netball. We have the coaching staff, we've got the players, we've got the brains behind the UAE Open squad with us here from the rooftop at Barasti. We should invite the netball team down more. I've never seen Barasti this busy. We're certainly this bit up here. There's usually just three of us in here. I don't know what you lot have done. You've brought the entire crowd down today. It's absolutely heaving in here. We've got Liv Mason, we've got Deb Jones, we've got Jill Porter, we've got Carly Lewis, and we've got Sarah Donovan all with us here. And what better place and what better time to be talking netball at the moment? It is in rude health, not just here in the UAE, but across the world. Why? Because it was one of the highlights, one of the most watched sports at the recently concluded Commonwealth Games down on the Gold Coast. And certain stories, certain fairy tales have helped to make dreams come true for certain individuals, but also put netball on to a different stratosphere, specifically back in England, where the England Roses have become household names after they took the gold medal down on the Gold Coast. And one of those gold medals is in the possession, the proud possession, of England Roses defence player Jodie Gibson, who joins us very kindly live on the line now. Jodie, first and foremost, from all your fans out here in the UAE, congratulations to you and the rest of the England Roses. Has it sunk in yet?
Thank you so much. It's incredible.
Has it sunk in yet or not?
No, not at all, no. Every time I'm thinking it's sinking in, something else happens. So we're like, you know, we're still on cloud nine. It's amazing.
It's extraordinary because obviously it's gone down and created so much history back in England. But also, what about the international interest that this has created for you and the rest of the team?
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm actually so surprised that I'm currently speaking to you guys over in Dubai. It's absolutely amazing. But I think England winning gold has just helped netball altogether. We've raised the profile of the game in England. And I think the Commonwealth Games this year was an amazing event for netball. There were so many teams competing, and you didn't know who were going to win each game, which is amazing for the sport of netball to watch the games and to be on the edge of the seat each game, not knowing who's going to be taking the win at the end of it. But yeah, it's really amazing time for the sport.
Jodie, there's no rest, though, is there, for you? You know, you were down on the Gold Coast this time last week. You had that flight back to the UK. You've been on the coach already today with the rest of the seven starts because you've got a game in about an hour, haven't you?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm actually still on the coach now, travelling down to Newcastle to play against Team Northumbria. So, yeah, very, very busy week. But it's great, though. It's fun.
And in terms of the sort of feedback that you've got throughout the week as well, since being back, do you get this idea, because there's certainly been a lot of chat about it in the media, get this idea that this will be a shot in the arm for netball in England, across the whole of the United Kingdom and across Europe as well? Will we see more coverage of netball as a result of your gold medal winning exploits?
Yeah, well, I hope so. I think we've had a really great reception from everybody over here in the UK. Since winning the gold medal, you don't normally see netball on the front page of any newspapers, and there we were when we arrived home on the front page of the newspapers. We've been all over the media, and it's amazing for the sport. I don't think we expected this response, so for us to receive this, it's incredible. And we just hope that we've been working really hard for this, just the netball to raise the profile, and that's been one of our aims over the past few years, to kind of get netball on the rise and get people just to recognise our sport and all the hard work we put into it. So it's amazing for England netball, but it's also amazing for the other countries that play the sport, and especially the UK countries, so the Wales, Scotland, and the Northern Ireland teams that play the sport in the UK. Just amazing.
Talk to me about the impact that Tracy Neville's had on England netball and netball in general over there. We know about her perseverance. It's a family trait, runs in the Neville family as well. Did she and the rest of the coaching staff have an impact on you in the build-up to the games?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Tracy has been great for the team. She's such a great personality, and she has so much passion for the sport, and so do all the other support staff. And I think what you can't forget is it's the coaches that came before Tracy that also had an input into this journey to get a gold medal. So I think it's been a long time coming, and we've been working really hard for it. I'm just so happy that we were able to achieve the gold medal at the Commonwealth Games.
You're playing for the Seven Stars a little later on this evening in what is a vastly and a very competitive league over in the United Kingdom as well. Looking for the victory a little later on?
Yeah, definitely. The Super League over here has actually been on a break to Commonwealth Games, so this is our first game back, so we really want to finish today with a win for Seven Stars, get some points on the board.
Listen, I am surrounded by the creme de la creme of talent here from netball talent in the region. We've got Sarah, we've got Carla, we've got Jill, we've got Deb, and we've got your mate Liv Mason alongside us as well. You got any messages for the girls?
Yeah, I just want to say well done for getting selected for the UAE team, ladies, and good luck for your competition in Gibraltar later in the year. I'll be right behind you, and especially you, Liv.
Congratulations. Well, again, to you and the rest of the team, Jodie, thanks very much indeed, and thanks for your time this afternoon. All the best for the game a little later on, and when you come out to the UAE, make sure you come on down here and join us live on the radio with the rest of the team.
Definitely. Yeah, I'll be over there, definitely. Thanks for having
Good
me.
Good on you, Jodie. Thanks so much indeed. Jodie
Thanks
Gibson
so
joining
Thank
us live
you.
On the line from the United Kingdom there. England Roses defence player and a representative of Seven Stars in the Pro League over in the United Kingdom. Liv listening on with interest to that one. And let's get your thoughts on that one, Liv. What about the impact that gold medal has had on netball, not just in England, but in the region?
It's been amazing. If you just look in the UK, it's everywhere. The social media is massive. I know from personally, Jodie has been all over the country on the radio, on the TV, and that just doesn't happen. Also, you know, for female sport, that's really huge, and for them to recognise that. So many people, so many even men have been talking about the game, are watching the game, and I actually don't think they realise what that's the sport looks like at international level, and it's really, really gained some interest. And that's one of the Commonwealth Games is one of two major competitions for netball. So there's that, and also England are hosting the World Cup next year. So in terms of publicity for that's going to be absolutely massive.
So yeah, it was really good.
Carly, what about you and your reaction to those gold medal winning exploits as well? Has that just given you yet more inspiration to take this game as far as you can?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was in school on the morning of the game, and even my kids in school, I know Deb mentioned earlier on about grassroots, the excitement that's just come from, not just England, not everywhere. And, I think for all of us, it's just really driven us to be like, okay, Nepal is on the map now, and it's just come at such a great time for us. You know, we're heading to Gibraltar in under 2 weeks. Come at such a great time, and going into that Gibraltar tournament, I think our spirits are very high. I think we know that people are going to be watching it. People are interested. People want us to do well. And, I mean, that's just great for us. And I know we are really going in with high hopes of doing really, really well in that competition. And like I said earlier, definitely bringing home some silverware.
And Jill, in terms of taking advantage of that success, the global focus that is on netball at the moment, is this a key time for netball, not just here in the region but globally as well?
It is, yeah, absolutely. And you can only really see that in the, it's so obvious in the media. It's not just that everyone's really excited that England won. I mean, that is huge, but it's throughout the Commonwealth Games we saw games, match after match, where matches were really contested that in just a couple of years ago there would have been an outright winner, and everyone would have known who was going to win that game once they stepped on the court. We see the African nations are really improving. It won't be long until they're competing even more than they are now with the likes of Australia and England and New Zealand. It's only growing the sport globally. People, the players are getting more athletic. There are more professional players on board now, so they've got that time to, spend going in the gym, working on their fitness, working on their training, rather than having to work a full-time job and then do their training afterwards. We're not quite in that position yet here, but give it a few years and we'll hopefully be there. We're really reliant on volunteers in what we do and on sponsorship. We're incredibly fortunate that we have amazing sponsorship from our kit sponsor, Acuma. They're a UK-based company, so we have our kit supplied by them. And we also have Emirates on board, which is huge for us. I believe we are one of the few women-only teams that they support. So, again, we're incredibly grateful for that. They're showing us huge support already. I think it's important to know that the players actually are funding themselves partly in travelling to Gibraltar. So are the coaches. So we're all paying a little bit towards, going over there. We don't get funding. We don't have everything paid for us. We do all work full-time jobs and train in our spare time. The more the sport grows globally, the more the opportunities will come to be able to grow the sport here as well, and make it, eventually professional for us here.
Talking about those opportunities, Sarah, and the opportunity that, you created for yourselves as well through the results as on the court, but also the input and the investment off the court as well. Just how key is Gibraltar to you and the rest of the team's development as well? Is it key that you go there and make and get the results that you need?
I think it's going to be our big splash. It's our entrance to the world of netball. I think everything we do now is a platform for the Emirati nationals to come. I think there's a very talented bunch here, and most of us are working within education or teachers. So again, the opportunity to have it streamed on YouTube, to have girls sit down in their homes and watch netball and watch UAE netball, it's going to be massive. And yes, it will be our first opportunity to get ourselves ranked, to get ourselves our stamp to say that UAE is here.
We've been talking about grassroots, Deb, a little earlier on. We're talking also about the youth. And I know that, as the head coach for the under-17s as well, you're looking to develop that youth and getting it into the schools as well. Is there player pathway, if you like? Is there hope for the future? Obviously, we've got the creme de la creme here, but with the youngsters coming through, is there potential for this to go further?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what the UAE Netball Association has as part of their vision statement. It's really important that all Emirates have some kind of player pathway so that netball at elite level is accessible to all people in all areas. Now, I do know that there are a couple of player pathways in Dubai. I know that there's one in Abu Dhabi at the minute, but again, they're in their infancy. There is no real structure to that within the governing body. And I think we're looking to our comrades within Netball Europe to look at the way that they structure their player pathways and then to bring that good practice back and then engage with all of those providers in the different Emirates so that we put something out as a UAE Netball Association that's actually worthy of what we want to produce.
talking on the production side of things, Liv, I mean, the team's going down to Gibraltar as well, in high hopes as well. I mean, is there the belief there? There's obviously the talent. Is there the belief there that you can, as Sarah was saying there, make a splash down there and make a name for yourselves?
Oh, definitely, yeah. We've got a really talented team, and we've also, through YouTube, been looking at the opposition and watching and knowing what the other countries are going to bring to us. But I think we're just working hard at the moment to establish our style of netball as a team, because obviously, again, playing in different clubs and then coming together as a whole team has been something that we've been working hard on, creating a really good culture and, again, being role models for the younger girls that are going to hopefully watch on.
Carly, are you going to take Gibraltar? Is it going to be yours?
Absolutely.
Good girl. Look at that. Hey? But that's what you need. The confidence is there, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The talent's there. Yeah. The confidence is there.
Yeah. Just looking forward to it, ready to go and do the business, I think, aren't we?
Looking forward to that. And Jill, let's just get your thoughts also on the sort of, you know, we're talking about the structure. We're talking about the board and the fact that it's taking a much more formal approach to netball here in the region. Are you also able to borrow excellence but also finding from other sports foundations and organizations here?
We are, yeah, and we have absolutely done that. One person who's been really key for us is Apollo Perolini.
Oh, really?
And the way things have gone with rugby here, I think he'd agree it's taken them about a 10-year process to be able to get an all Emirati women's rugby team playing overseas. So we've definitely had, you know, conversation after conversation, picked his brains with how the way things have gone in rugby. Yeah, we definitely take learnings from elsewhere. I think it's the only way you can do things here. We have had a lot of support from the government. I think it's important to us that they have adopted our sport. They didn't have to, you know, everything's very new to them, so obviously can be quite scary when it's purely an expat sport. But yeah, in terms of learnings, rugby's definitely been a great one for us. Also, badminton have had some great feedback for us as well. We've had some learnings from the guys who've been working there.
Sharing that knowledge, sharing that expertise. Unfortunately, we've got to share the airwaves now with the Premier League as we are waiting to head on over to our feature game this evening. So that's coming up your way in just a few minutes' time. Watford taking on Crystal Palace. Stay tuned for that. Not, though, before I need some details from you. So let's keep the mic with you, Jill. If people want to get involved, you know, be that from a playing point of view, be that from an officiating point of view, be that from a sponsorship point of view, if anyone's listening, how do they do it?
So they can go to the Netball UAE website, which is netballuae.com. We have on there a page where you can access the leagues and the providers in the area. We have also some great social media channels. You can follow the teams when we travel to Gibraltar. Keep up to date with everything there. Yeah, that's the easiest way. Yeah.
Get involved. And Jill, I suppose the question is also, if you are keen to get involved, then do come on down.
Yeah, absolutely. Get in touch with us via social media and we can point you in the right direction, regardless of which emirate you're from, regardless of which nationality, whether you've played before, whether you haven't, whether you're male or female. You know, we do have leagues where there's mixed netball played. So, yeah, every type of, newcomer, age, nationality is more than welcome. We want to get everyone involved. The most important thing for us is we want to share our sport with everyone. We want everyone to love it just as much as we do and get as many people playing as possible. It's the only way that we can get it growing. Just get in touch.
Good luck to all of you in Gibraltar. Thanks so much indeed to all of you for joining us as well, for all those that spoke, all those that didn't, came on down to support their team as well, to Liv, to Deb, to Jill, to Carly, to Sarah, to the rest of the girls as well. Thank you very much indeed and the best of luck in Gibraltar.
Thank you.
That's it from us. We are about to hand on over to our Russell, who's down there at the Watford Crystal Palace game. That's your live commentary. And then we've got the Man U game straight after that. Is that right,
yeah,
Chris?
Yeah, we do indeed, Tom. That game kicks off 8:15, Manchester United against Tottenham, the opening Emirates FA Cup semi-final of the weekend. Chelsea Southampton tomorrow.
Thanks very much indeed to you, Chris McCarty.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks also to you, CVR. You haven't told us what's happened in the rugby.
Yeah, what I can tell you is, Tom, that the first of the semi-finals have ended. And what I can tell you is Gloucester will be taking on Cardiff Blues in the Challenge Cup final. In Super Rugby, it's the Bulls leading the Rebels 21-3 at half time. And don't forget, of course, the other semi-final, the European Cup, kicks off at 6:30 UAE time. It's Leinster taking on Scarlets.
Thanks so much indeed to you, CVR. Thanks so much indeed to you, Chris McCarty. Thanks so much indeed to you, Phil Hardy, and of course all the team down here at Barasti. We're back next week from 3 till 6. Until then, Enjoy your sport. There's lots on of it.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.